Howdy, writers! KJ here, staring ahead into fall 2021 and trying to ignore the fact that it feels like staring into the abyss. Stop. Wait. That's really not where I meant to go with that. What I want to focus on is the other part of fall. Crunchy leaves, pumpkins, apples, school supplies, fresh starts. If that's the part of fall you want more of, maybe it's time for a new beginning as a book coach. Just imagine enrolling in the classes, meeting a cohort, learning all the ways coaches are editorial and emotional support for writers, and then starting to line up your first clients. Students working with Author Accelerator say they begin to book authors before they're even done with the course, and often end up being booked months in advance. Sound like fun? Agreed. Go to bookcoaches.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hello, Am Writing listeners. Welcome to the podcast. Hashtag Am Writing is the podcast about all the writing things, about queries, about... what else do we write? We write short stories, long stories, fiction, nonfiction. We write all the things. And this, of course, is the podcast mostly about getting the things done. And KJ normally does our intro, which is why mine was all over the place. But this is Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure that came out in 2015 and my new book, The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence. And what longtime listeners know is that I was a teacher for 20 years. And one of my very first teaching jobs, my second real teaching job, was at a school in Salt Lake City, Utah, while my husband was doing his residency, Roland Hall St. Mark's. And I walked into that classroom with, 2 days' notice before school started. And one of the students in that class is today's guest. Will Morey is our guest today. And you guys are going to love this conversation because we get asks all the time for a conversation. About this. But Will was my student in high school, and he was a brilliant writer then and is a brilliant writer now. And we're going to go down memory lane in just a minute. But Will is here to talk about a couple of different things, actually. Will's here to talk about writing for television and specifically one of the big three sort of paid providers, and also getting our feet wet in expanding out of that field. So, Will, yay! Hey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
I'm so happy you're here. So I have to say, my memory of Will from high school, and I'm not going to do too much of this, is that, Will, you were working on a screenplay, I believe, that had, vampires in it at the time, when you were a junior in high school. Is that correct?
That's right. Junior, because the Roland Hall had a thesis type program that you could do called Distinctions. And a bunch of my friends, we all were interested in filmmaking. And so we were going to get together and sort of do a film for that. And I had written this script inspired by my love of the movie Blade and some other things, a comedic vampire hunter thing. We didn't end up actually making that. We ended up making a sort of mock reality show. But yes, I had written the script, and I think I had given you a copy at one point.
I think it's always best that the first thing doesn't get made or written or, written, but not published slash made slash out there for other human consumption, because it's where you're practicing, I think. But
that's right. Yeah.
So does that mean, though, that you have always wanted to be a writer?
Yes. I've wanted to be a writer since I was 8 years old. My cousin lied to my mother and told her that RoboCop was actually PG-13 when it is very much not. And either my mom was convinced by my cousin's lie or just didn't really feel like having the fight at that time. So I ended up watching RoboCop at 8, and I said, that is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to make that. And And now here we are.
So take us through. So you have a script that you have written in while you're still in high school, and you still have your eyes on the prize. You know that's what you want to do. So you finish high school, you go to college. Will you share with everyone where you went to college?
I went to Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Well, and actually, I just had a conversation. I was visiting a college very much like Hampshire College that I'll talk to you about offline because it's my kids' college selection stuff, not for everybody's consumption. A college very much like Hampshire College. And I remember when you went there, I thought, oh, this is going to be a good fit, mainly because it's all that independent inquiry stuff. Another place where Will gets to go off and running with a writing project. Did you write much in college?
I did. Actually, I did a lot. And one of the great things about Hampshire is that you basically design your own major. And so one of the things that I did, when I went to college, I wanted to be a writer and director. And then when I moved to LA, I was disabused of the notion of directing at all. I wanted to make movies and be a filmmaker. So what's great about Hampshire is you create your own major. And I was really interested in mythology and all this stuff. So I basically did narrative studying narrative, but through comic books and mythology and a lot of Joseph Campbell stuff. But I also got hooked up with a group of friends there, and we all wanted to be filmmakers. And Hampshire is kind of a weird place in that most of the film students want to make either really interesting documentaries about social issues or weird experimental stuff. And my friends and I were really only interested in making, well, you know, big Hollywood blockbuster movies and things like that, and, you know, silly comedic stuff. So my friends and I got together, and we created a web series for the college TV station. And so we were doing that, and then, like Roland Hall, they have what's called, our theses are different. They're just called Div 3s, where you do a big independent project at the end of your time there. And I ended up actually reconfiguring the script I'd written in sophomore year of high school to do that as my vampire hunter thing in college. So, and I ended up making that, and that was that.
Okay, so college ends. And then now you still have big aspirations. You're going to be a big Hollywood writer and director. So what do you do? There's that big leap off the cliff. I'm actually here's another fun fact. So when my child that's about to graduate from college, like in February, was when I was teaching Will, that child used to come to school with me sometimes, and they would put him in an office chair and roll him up and down the halls at school. So it's a little weird for me to be thinking about, like, you know, my kid being in the position of, you know, about to jump off the cliff, leaving college. And I was having a conversation yesterday with a bunch of his classmates about that cliff and how scary that cliff is, especially when you have really big dreams about the thing you want to do. And you know no one's going to let you do that right out of college. So what happens when you leave college?
Well, so I kind of took a very weird circuitous route through things, but so I graduated college, and all of my friends happened to be a year younger. So a lot of the support network that you kind of get when you leave college, just they weren't done yet. So I ended up staying home with my parents, saving money to move out to LA with my friends from college. So I was at home. I was at home for a year, and I was working on some writing projects on my own. I was working at various jobs, and then once they graduated, they moved out to LA. And on their way out to LA, they came through Utah and picked me up, and we went and we moved out together.
So it was the basic, you know, moving out to the place where dreams are made, with a few bucks in your pocket and a couple of friends, newly minted college graduates. And it all fell into place immediately, right? Suddenly, you know, you walked into town and people just handed you job offers.
Right, absolutely. I walked in and I said, here's my script, and they bought it. And no. And it took a long time. I mean, I was doing a bunch of odd jobs in LA. I was doing a lot of production assistant work, and I was working on sets. And I did kind of my first couple months out here, I fell in with a direct-to-video production company that makes what they call mockbusters. So when Transformers is coming out, they made Transmorphers. and I ended up working on a bunch of movies for them. I worked on The Day the Earth Stopped, and The Day the Earth Stood Still. And I ended up working on the sequel to Transmorphers, Transmorphers 2, because the second Transformers movie was coming out. And then I worked on Dragon Quest because the Dragon Ball movie was coming out. And then because there was a new Terminator movie coming out, they needed a writer to write one. And I ended up writing the first draft of the Terminators.
Now, listeners, I want you to realize, but there's so much learning that's happening during this period, right? Because it's not like, you know, just because you're not writing the blockbuster film doesn't mean that you're not learning your chops about how on earth to write a real, like, not just the screenplay, like where you pull down the Scrivener template and now suddenly it looks like a script. You're actually learning your chops about how these things work. So, you know, we're laughing about this, but this is really useful information and learning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if they still do it this way, but at the time, they shot a movie in 2 weeks. You know, these were ultra micro-budget movies. So they're shooting a movie in 2 weeks, and some of them are pretty ambitious and maybe too ambitious in some respects. But
yeah,
that on-the-ground learning of, like, how a movie is put together and how these things work is invaluable, as frustrating as it could be working for them sometimes. But it was all part of the process of kind of figuring out how the filmmaking process worked, which then informs your writing, too, because you're supposed to, when you're writing a script, you're supposed to have some sort of sense of kind of that, how it's put together on the way. So I kind of did a bunch of odd jobs. I did assistant edited, which was really helpful too, because sort of seeing how the footage was shot and then, you know, later seeing how it was edited together. So
I remember hearing in an interview one time, Kevin Smith, who, you know, is famous for Clerks and all his other stuff, he talked about the fact that the way he edits on the fly as they're shooting the film, and he is the editor for the most part. And knowing the editing stuff helps him be a better writer and a better director because he can see how it's all going to go together. So I can imagine how that would be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of knowing, I mean, in the screenwriting process, it's not as important, but it is sort of good to have in the back of your mind how a scene is put together and how it might be cut or how it might be shot. Mm-hmm. It's yeah.
Okay, so spoiler alert. You break out of the secondary. I don't know what did you call this originally when you make a movie that's not the movie itself but close?
Mockbuster is what is their term.
Mockbusters. Okay.
Is their term for it.
Okay, so what happens after Mockbusters? You get all this great, we call this, by the way, even this is amazing to, like, you're paying for, you're not paying for, you're putting in time for essentially an incredible education that is going to lead to the next thing. So what's the next thing?
Well, it in my case, it wasn't much. I ended up working for this production company, Leverage Management. Is a management and production company. They produced Entourage and In Treatment and Boardwalk Empire, a bunch of other shows too. You know, they're hooked up with Mark Wahlberg. So I ended up working for them doing kind of office assistant-y type stuff. And I was reading a lot of scripts, which helped, sort of seeing how other writers visualize, you know, a script page and that kind of thing.
And what resonates? I mean, obviously, if you're at a production company, you're learning about, okay, here's the slush pile, here's the pile of stuff that gets picked. And it gives you a really good idea of what people are looking for, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. And sort of what's commercial. And, you know, when it's attached to sort of Mark Wahlberg, you sort of get to see, like, what a big star would choose and what they think, what they think is important, because Mark is also a producer. So I was working there for a while and it started to sort of run me down. I was there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it started to run me down because it was like, I'm not really doing what I want to do. I'm just sort of doing the day-to-day operations of of these things. So, but because of my support network with my friends, who at the time I was still living with, or I just moved in with my then girlfriend, now wife, and he had started working as a writer's assistant on the spinoff to How to Train Your Dragon, the animated series. And I'd always loved animation and wanted to get into animation. And when he got promoted to a staff writer on a different show, they were looking for a writer's assistant. And,
nice.
And my hat got thrown in the ring. And then that's really what kicked off my career, so to speak. So
that's the other thing I was going to ask about is I was just talking to someone who's very heavy in the Los Angeles scene. He's actually been a lead player in a bunch of movies and stuff, and he decided to move away from Los Angeles. And we were talking about the disadvantages of not being in that soup so that when someone moves on from one place or another, or you hear a rumor when you're at the coffee shop about whatever, how essential, especially in this sort of climate where people are doing stuff virtually, how essential is it for you to be there
the soup? Well, now with everything virtual, it's still kind of an open question on how. I was actually talking to a friend who's a producer now. He was one of the writers on The Dragon Show, and he, he's like, I don't know if we're going to stay in LA because I don't know. He's like, I don't really love LA, and it might not be as important for me to stay here. So it's kind of right now the industry is really starting to figure out how to deal with remote working and if that's going to be a thing. But at the time, it's really important. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead too much in the timeline
here.
But after I rolled off Dragons, because after being a writer's assistant, I was eventually promoted to staff writer. After rolling off Dragons, I was unemployed for a good chunk of time and trying to find work and stuff. And I had lunch with the former writer's assistant, who then got promoted to a writer on a different Dragons spinoff show. and she, you know, we had lunch and she was like, I am overworked and I need another writer. And she was the only writer on staff at the time. And she said, I need another writer. If you want, I can put in a good word with Jack, the showrunner. And I said, that'd be great. And then, you know, Jack was one of the writers also on the previous Dragons iteration too. So I had a relationship with him, I've been trying to get lunch with Jack forever. And then Jack called me up and said, yeah, we're not going to get lunch, but I want to hire you.
That's excellent. So I do have to say, going back to Dragons, so my kids, especially my younger kid, was a huge fan of the How to Train Your Dragon books. So as far as he was concerned, you were like a superstar. When I told him that one of my former students was writing How to Train Your Dragon, it was a big deal around here. It was a very, very big deal. So I'm assuming How to Train Your Dragon, a show like that, this was with Netflix, correct?
Well, it's a DreamWorks show. So okay. It was really through DreamWorks as the studio and Netflix was the distribution company. And I don't know if it's changed totally, but at the time, Netflix would sort of throw money at studios, but the studios had to have everything in place. They had to have the writers, everything ready to go, and then Netflix would pay for it. You couldn't like walk into Netflix and then buy it. That's starting to change. I know that they're starting to have like their own production company that makes things. But at the time, and when I joined, they had just made a deal with DreamWorks to produce 500 hours of content for them. Because they were like Netflix was just starting to get into the kids space and starting to make kids TV. And that was kind of the big thing. And it started up a whole TV production arm of DreamWorks that they didn't have almost overnight.
When you came into Dragon, did you come in on the first season? I can't remember.
Well, I came in at the very tail. So the How to Train Your Dragon Riders of Berk was the first season. And then I think it was called Defenders of Berk was the second season. And when
So you're having to write, sorry to interrupt, but that means that you're having to write for pre-existing characters, which means you're having to adapt. You know, this is not Will Morey's voice necessarily coming out in these characters. These are pre-existing characters that you have to adapt your writing for. And what's that process like for you?
I mean, it, Well, because I was the writer's assistant, I had to do these things called conforms, which is once the episode is recorded and they have all the voice actors, you have to go through the script and adjust the lines to what the voice actor said. So if there was like an improv in the moment, so I had to listen to these episodes almost twice, you know, a day, and then transcribing basically what was happening. And that actually sort of gave me the voice of the show, in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
It was basically, you know, I had the headphones on and I was just transcribing. So by the time I was promoted to staff writer, I didn't find it that difficult to sort of figure out the show because I was so like hip deep in it, you know, and the voices of the characters and everything. And it's hard because, you know, it's a property that's owned by a giant company and they are very protective of it and they have very specific things they need. And our show took place between the first and second movie. So we you know, didn't have a ton of wiggle room there. So it was, and you know, and when you're a staff writer, you're in service of the showrunners who are above you. And for me, because I was, you know, they call them baby writers or junior writers. you know, all the other writers were senior above me, so they had a say too. And then you have the on top of that, you have the studio and the executives saying, "Oh no, we don't want this. We don't." So it's kind of, you have to put your ego aside, really do, when you're doing that, because there's so much that you just have to accept. This is not mine. This is somebody else's, and you know, if you're lucky, maybe you get in a whole scene or a joke or five lines, you know, it's not always it, but it's not your episode when you're writing it. You have to think of it as part of the bigger whole, you know, it's the showrunner. It's really the showrunner show. And then if the studio has things they want in it, it's theirs too.
So I was lucky enough to get to work on a show also. I only maybe like one or two things I ever said became lines in the show. But my job was to review the scripts for, just to make sure that the scripts of the Stinky and Dirty show at Amazon Prime adhered to the curriculum that I had designed around resilience and all that, the failure and all that other sort of stuff. And I found out my big weakness, which is being able to read something on the page and envision it on the screen. I just have it. And I got better at it. It definitely was something I had to learn how to do. But there were moments when I was reading it thinking, I have no idea how this is going to look on the screen. And the look on the screen is going to be important to the curriculum too, because like the reaction of a character in response to when another character makes a mistake or something like that is important. And I had a lot of trouble with that. Is that something that you found? I mean, this is clearly an essential part of being able to write for the screen. Was that something that came easily to you, or was that something that developed?
I think it's a little bit of both. My parents are are in the arts. My dad is a playwright and a theater director, and my mom is an actress. So I'd always sort of like had at least some sense of what it means when it's like on the page and what it looks like when it's on its feet, so to speak, in the theater speak. but it's not something that I inherently got, because what I learned through the process of working for the Asylum, the Mockbuster people, and working on Dragons is that you could write something in an outline, and by the time you start writing the script, it doesn't work. And then when you write the script, something that you think works on the page, it doesn't work when it's actually visualized. And then by the time it's actually visualized, maybe it doesn't work in the edit. So like every time you go through the process, you realize something is different, you know?
Yeah.
Something that worked, you know, that worked in the outline where it's like one sentence, it's like they fly from here to there. By the time you get to the script, you're like, well, we need to figure out what am I actually seeing? Is this important to see? Like, or, and then maybe a joke that you thought was brilliant on the page when it's actually said by real people sounds like robots. And you're like, this can't work, you know? So it's it's a process, and it's something that you can only get by doing it, you know, and by sort of being in the weeds.
So Dragons happens, and you still have, I'm assuming, some aspirations about what you want to do next. And does it become easier? I mean, I think for a lot of people, navigating television or movies or whatever is this sort of, number one, it has to always be about who you know. You have to know someone in order to get from point A to point B. And I know that's not always true, but it's often true. And have those paths to the next place become easier for you to sort of trace out and figure out how to get to where you want to be? And where is that? I mean, if you feel free, comfortable sort of sharing, sure. I'd love to know what your sort of ultimate vision is of what you'd like to do.
I mean, ultimately, I would love to run a show. And I am perfectly happy if that is running, say, another He-Man show, like a new He-Man show or something I create. I'm not picky on that front. I would love to be the person in charge, reading scripts and giving notes to writers and notes to artists and things like that. I would love that. I think breaking into the industry is hard. Staying in the industry is hard, too, because what I've noticed happens is that you fall off people's radars very easily if they don't know you're around. But it's hard because you also don't want to be like constantly nudging people saying, Hey, I'm here.
You know, okay, so you're describing exactly what happens with editors at publications. So, like, you know, if there's this constant fear in me, like, oh, I haven't written anything recently. Have they completely forgotten all about me? Because I'm up here in Vermont in my office and no one sees me at the lunchroom or anything. So, yeah, I completely get that.
Yeah, that's kind of tricky navigating that. I'm lucky to have a lot of friends that I've made sort of across the years who are willing to have coffee with me or chat, which is great. And they're willing to be they're willing to read work that I've written and things. It's right now it's for me, it's been hard. My wife and I just had a son almost 2 years ago. So I've mostly been kind of focusing on that and working on projects on the side. And I've been lucky enough to do a lot of development work and sort of help out, get sort of shows ready to be pitched and things. So I don't know. It's tricky, and it's still something I'm kind of figuring out how to get to point A to point B. I'm unrepresented at the moment, and that's been sort of a challenge to find representation.
That was going to be my next question, which is how important is it for you to have an agent as a writer?
I mean, I think I know from all my friends who are represented, they say they have to sort of also do the hustle too, and sort of, you know, get their own meetings and that. But the thing is that an agent gives that you don't is they have a lot more, or manager has a lot more connections and knows a lot more people and can put you in touch with a lot more people and expand your network that way. So that's, but it's a similar thing with an agent, you know, they're concerned about their own clients. And you, if you're unrepresented or trying to get represented, you still have to kind of prod them. And it's the same thing. It's like, if you're not right in front of their face, what do you do? So,
well, and speaking of which, I wanted to ask you, because we've never actually talked about this, about the difference between a writer for getting an agent, a difference between getting an agent for a literary agent, for example, or an agent who represents writers in Hollywood. Are there different agents? Are they the same agents? Do some people do both? How does it work, that agenting?
It's very, my understanding, I'm sort of dipping my toe into the publishing world. So my understanding is it's very different. A lit agent is, their tasks and their jobs and their needs are very different from an agent for writers. But I mean, I think the jobs are inherently similar, but it's just a little different.
There's turf differences is my understanding.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, I think, and you're dealing with a lot more different people and probably a lot more money.
Right. Well, I know when KJ, my co-host, switched from nonfiction to fiction, she had to switch agents, same agency, but different agents, because the relationships that people have are just different. And since you brought it up, or am I allowed to talk a little bit about what you've been working on recently as a side project?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, tell us what that thing is and why you've been working on it as a side project.
So a couple different things happened. My son was born last January, you know, that just took up a whole bunch of time. And
as children do.
As children do. And when he, for the first 6 months that he was born, we didn't feel totally comfortable just leaving him in the crib during his naps or things. So one of us would sort of sit in the room with him and he'd sleep and we'd putter on our phones or a computer. And eventually I just got kind of bored, just sort of mindlessly staring at Twitter or my email. And I had maybe 30 to 40 pages of a very terrible novel that I had, you know, that I had sitting in a hard drive. And I was like, well, I'll just see what happens. And I started writing and kept writing and kept writing. And then before I knew it, I was making logs in my, I was making logs in my phone on notes about how many words I was writing. And then before I knew it, I knew the end. And and it just became a real novel. And I didn't intend it to. It was just kind of something I was like, well, I'll just sort of flex a creative muscle and see what's going on. And it became a novel. And I then reworked it because it was a disaster by the time I finished it. But and it was something I'm sort of proud of. And it kind of was born out of, well, also, you know, my son was born and then the pandemic happened and I just needed sort of an outlet. And I was sort of frustrated with the limitations of CG animation and the limitations of what the studios were looking for. Cause right now everyone seems to be looking for comedies and straight comedies. And I'm just kind of, I want to write like big adventure stuff. So I kind of wrote my homage to sword and sorcery novels. And that was, yeah.
Which takes us to the question we get most often, I think, here on the podcast, which is, how do you get an agent? And I know you're in the process of trying to secure a literary agent. So how did you go about trying to choose who you were going to query first?
Well, I started looking. So I started first, I started looking at like what, because since my thing is a YA fantasy adventure, I started looking at what sort of the books that mm-hmm. were coming out that were fantasy adventure and specifically in the YA space. And then I read some of them and I started looking at the agents of the ones that I liked and sort of
often
saying,
mentioned, well, as we have said a million times, often mentioned in the acknowledgements. If you want to know if you go to a book that you really like, go to the acknowledgements and find out who they thank. Often the agent will be there.
Well, and unlike writers or directors or actors in Hollywood, a lot of writers just put their representation information on their websites. It was very easy to find.
Yeah, it's gotten easy. It's gotten easier with the internet and people having their own web pages. That's true.
So then I went to the various websites and sort of looked at the agents. I looked at the agents specifically who represented the books or the authors, I kind of went down and looked at agents and sort of saw where it seemed like we had similarities and seemed like, oh, this person might be kind of fun to work with. Or there's one agent I had been following on Twitter for years and just sort of was like, oh, this person's really cool. And just kind of was like, well, and I made a list of 10 and I've sent out 4 query letters at this point. So I'm going to try it for 10 and
you're absolutely doing it the way we always recommend, which is not the big shotgun method of, you know, oh, these people sound like they're fancy, so I'm going to, you know, send. You've been very, you know, you've got a honed approach, which I think it tends to, you're going to get better response, hopefully, based on a really honed approach. One of the things that people don't seem to understand is the need to follow the directions exactly as the agents ask for on their websites. And if nothing else, you have learned a lot about following very specific directions about what everybody in the production wants along the line. Yeah. So I'm assuming that part came easily to you.
Yeah, that part was easy. And luckily, it's none of them are too different from each other. They're all, a lot of the submission guidelines are basically the same. You know, with minor differences here and there. But
I just applied for a fellowship and I basically made a checklist of all of the requirements for how I submit everything. Like they had a naming convention for how they wanted the submission named and everything. And it's like, check it 6 times. Make sure you're sending it the right way. Oh, no, not in a Word document, but in a PDF. Okay, I got it. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people get a little huffy and will toss you in the trash can the moment you don't do it the way they want it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so what's next for Will Morey? What are you working on now and near future stuff?
What am I? I'm working on, trying to get this novel represented and/or published. We'll see on that.
You're gonna have to keep us posted, by the way, on that.
I will. And I'm working on. I've been working on development work for a couple things that I can't really talk about. But that's
and a lot
been,
of that takes
been,
place like years out, right? Like usually with development.
Yeah, it takes forever. But it's been a lot of fun, and actually it helped writing my query letter, because a lot of what development work is writing like pitch documents and Bibles, which is all just sort of like a lot of taking a lot of information, condensing it down into its easily digestible bites. So it's been really helpful doing that and learning sort of how to summarize things quickly and efficiently with as much punch as possible. So that's kind of, I've been doing a lot of pitch documents and Bibles. Yeah.
Well, this is really, really helpful. I think we had the women from Happier in Hollywood podcast on, and they're currently writing for Fantasy Island, and they've done development stuff in development, and they've done a whole bunch of different stuff. But I love getting, you know, the small details of what helps you become proficient. And the other reason I wanted to have you on was to talk about the path there and the education that, you know, you were saying at one point, you said, oh, the next step wasn't any big deal. It was this thing I did with a production company, but that is a big deal. It's a big part of the education you need in order to get to the next place. And I think what you have done so well is have made hay out of all of the, even at one point you went back to working in the theater for a while. And I think that, you know, all of that is really useful as you move forward. It's all experience. It's all learning something new about your craft. So it's been really incredibly fun for me to watch you progress as a writer. I mean, you know, from grading your high school essays to getting to watch stuff that you had a hand in writing. It's been pretty special for me. So grateful to you that I have been kept informed of the steps of the process. That's meant a lot to me.
I mean, well, it, you know, you're one of the many reasons I'm a writer in the first place. You know, you really encouraged me in high school and pushed me.
I'm making faces here. Will can see me, but you people can't see me. I'm making horrified, humiliated faces. But thank you.
No, but it's true. I mean, but I think that's what a great teacher does. You know, pushes their students to be better and to think better and think more critically about what you're working on. And
understanding that editing actually is important. I think that's one of the biggest things that you know, a lot of students just want to write stuff and have it be perfect. And I'm helping my son right now with college essays, and same thing, you know, you want to write them and have it be golden and perfect and never have to go back and edit. But helping people understand the importance of editing has been, you know, one of the biggest things I've done.
And for screenwriting too, I mean, there was a time right around when I left college where I thought everything I wrote was perfect. First draft. It's great. And you quickly get disabused of that notion if you start working in this business, because you will get smacked if you give out a first draft, and just the amount of things that just...
Yeah.
You realize, oh, yeah, this isn't good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, will you keep us apprised? I will keep people apprised if you keep me apprised in our hashtag MWriting Facebook group. If people are interested in finding out more about what you do, I don't know if you have a website, but you can certainly go and watch the seasons of How to Train Your Dragon that you were on, that kind of thing. But is there anywhere where people can sort of find your work?
Yeah, I don't have a website at the moment, and I should rectify that. But you can find me on Twitter. My handle is @WillOfMars, and I'm on Instagram. I don't post that often. I post pictures of my cats and my kid, and sometimes the action figures that I make whenever I have free time. I'm on Instagram. I think you can just search my name, Will Morey, and I'll show up.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Will.
Thank you, Jess.
This has been super special for me. I hope the listeners have gotten something out of it too. I know I did. So I'll just selfishly leave it at that this was super fun for me. It's meant a lot. So.
Thank you, Jess. It's great having you being here.
All right. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Thank you.